Welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Stories of Determination. I'm your host, Betsy Graziani Fassbender. Today's episode of the Morning Glory Project was recorded several weeks ago when the words coronavirus and social distancing and all of those kinds of things were not even in our minds, much less in our conversations. So, of course, my beautiful guest, Grant Faulkner, and I did not discuss those matters. But what we did discuss was creativity and how to reach your own goals and how to attack a large project by breaking it into small ones. Whether you're a writer wanting to write stories or novels or other kinds of books, or whether you have some other creative endeavor that you've been wanting to attack, or even some task that you've just needed to do that seems insurmountable, I trust that our conversation will bring some information, some inspiration, and a few ideas for you. Whether you are in your home, homebound by this virus, whether you are caring for others, whether you're worried about your loved ones who are out taking care of others, I will hold hopes for you in my heart that you are safe and well, as are those that you care about. Let's be kind to one another, huh? Thanks for listening. It's my happiness today to welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Grant Faulkner. Grant is a writer's writer and an author's author. He champions the work of others in his role as the executive director of National Novel Writing Month, also known as NaNoWriMo, and the co-founder of 100 Word Story. He has published two books on writing, Pep Talks for Writers, 52 Insights and Actions to Boost Your Creative Mojo, and Brave the Page, which is a teen writing guide, in addition to a collection of his own 100-word stories, Fishers and Nothing Short of 100, Selected Tales from a 100-word Story. His story collection, All the Comfort Sin Can Provide, is forthcoming from Black Lawrence Press in 2021. Grant's stories have appeared in dozens of literary magazines, including Tin House, the Southwest Review, the Gettysburg Review, and his essays on creativity have been published in the New York Times, Poets and Writers, Writer's Digest, and The Writer. He serves on the National Writing Projects Writers Council, Lit Camp's Advisory Council, and Aspen Words Creative Council. He is also the co-host of Right Minded, a weekly podcast for writers. Follow him on Twitter at Grant Faulkner and on Instagram at Grant Faulkner. And first of all, before we say one more word, I just want to say how unfair it is that you as a writer get Faulkner as your last name. That's just doesn't seem like a fair cut to me. I'm just telling you.
It's a lot to carry around, a lot to live up to.
Yeah. Well, this bio, I don't know how you have time to breathe, frankly, Grant, given all that you're accomplishing. And I also know that you're a partner and a dad and all kinds of other good things. So it's amazing how much we can squeeze in, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I think at NaNoWriMo, we like that old saying that if you want to get something done, ask a busy person to do it. I think there's something strange about being super busy is that you can actually do more. I think there's something about having a lot of time that it induces a sense of lethargy, you know? And you end up just kind of wasting time in a lot of ways that you don't even know you're wasting time. You just do. And, you know, like I think sometimes back, like we got a dog for my kids, and this was, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. And I remember driving home from the pound. I'm a dog lover, but I looked at this dog and I knew that I was the one who was going to walk it most mornings and most evenings. And I did a little bit of tallying, time tallying. And I thought, you know, I'm going to spend anywhere from easily a half an hour to an hour a day, and sometimes more, with this dog just walking it. Time that I did not have, you know, like I didn't feel like I had an extra 10 minutes in my life then. But somehow I walk the dog every day. I spend a half an hour and an hour with the dog, and I still get about the same amount of stuff done. So I don't know how that happens, but it does.
Well, and that's a bit of what I want to talk to you about, because I called you here a writer's writer and an author's author. You're in the business of encouraging people's productivity and creativity. But there are so many obstacles that seem to get in the way for creative people, you know, dog walking as well as other things. But I'm wondering how, for you as the writer, as opposed to as the writer's writer, for you as your own, for when you're in your own project, how do you overcome distraction, competition for time, lethargy, resistance, frustration, whatever it might be? How do you do that?
That's a big question there. I think there are a number of different ways to go about it. I mean, I think the savior for me as a writer, I always say, is that I'm a kooky sleeper. And so I wake up at this ungodly hour every day. And without an alarm clock, I just wake up usually at 4 or 4:30. And that allows me to get in about a couple hours of writing before walking the dog. And so that really saves it for me, is that I have the sleep schedule that gives me time alone every day to write. But beyond that, if you don't have a kooky sleep schedule, and I could not write in the evenings, or I can barely write in the evenings. I'm so exhausted after a day of work and writing. So, but you know, NaNoWriMo is all about exactly this. You know, I think a lot of times that sense of lethargy, that sense of like, I'm going to write a novel someday, I'm going to start it next week, or you start it next week and you keep writing in a kind of, you know, dabbling fashion. I think a goal and a deadline is really key.
Well, and don't you think that's true also, whether you're a writer or whether you're a maker of some other kind?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think having a goal and a deadline, I mean, with creative projects, you know, you can write a novel for a lifetime. You can write a first draft for a lifetime. And having a goal and a deadline, you know, it puts, especially a goal of a word count, it puts a certain quantification around every day. Like if you wake up and you know you have to write 1,000 words that day, if that's your goal, then you're going to structure your day around writing that 1,000 words, you know, it becomes a priority. And I think, and then if you track how many words you write a day, you're going to know where you're falling short. And if you're only writing 500 words a day and you're writing 1,000, you need to think about, how can I find time to write that extra 500 words? And I think most people can find the time, and they can find the time in a lot of different ways. Like maybe they write on their lunch breaks. Maybe they write in any little, like, time confetti, any little moments of time they have for the day. Maybe they can't write 1,000 words a day, but they go on marathon writing sessions during the weekend. Maybe they wake up earlier. You know, there's a ton of strategies in order to do it. The thing is about a goal and a deadline is it's not only about getting your projects done, it also makes you self-aware of how you spend time. And we're living in this great age of tracking tools and accountability. And you know, so you can track the way you spend time on the internet. You can, you know, there are all different ways to slice and dice it. And so we have this knowledge at our fingertips, or you can just write it down and log it too. And so I think that's one way to get time.
Well, let me pause for a second here, because I realize you and I are speaking in code, and I want to let everybody in on what NaNoWriMo is, those who are unaware, whether they're a writer or a wannabe writer, or you aren't ever writing at all, but you know somebody who is. Can you tell us a bit about what NaNoWriMo is and what you do there?
Yeah, good point. Sometimes we talk about it and forget that not everyone has done it or knows about it, because a lot of people do it. About 500,000 people sign up to write with us every year. And our big event is called National Novel Writing Month. It happens every November. The acronym for it is NaNoWriMo. And it's a basic challenge. Write 50,000 words of a novel in 30 days. That's 1,667 words per day. It's good to have a doable goal, but it's also good to have a goal that you stretch for. And so on one hand, it's about, you know, writing a bunch of words in November. And the idea is, don't write that novel someday, write it today. And that's why we have it compressed in a month, to put pressure on you to make it a priority for a month. Because so often in our adult lives, writing isn't a priority, or creativity isn't a priority. You know, it falls lower and lower on our to-do list as adults, until it might not be on our to-do list at all. So part of writing NaNoWriMo is to make creativity a priority. And part of it is also to do it with a bunch of other people. And so it's that idea that you join a community, and that community supports you in reaching your goal. It's a very friendly, encouraging, but also whip-cracking community. And so that's it in a nutshell. It's many other things, but I think that describes the basic framework of how we operate. And we say, I'll just say one more thing. we say that a goal and a deadline is a creative midwife. And that's what I was talking about earlier, is that having a goal and a deadline really is a creativity igniter.
Well, I'll confess here too that I've been a NaNoWriMo participant quite a few times now. I have three published books, two of which got started or worked on during two different NaNoWriMos, and a third that's coming out that got started on NaNoWriMo. So I'm a fan.
Yay!
I don't always win. There's an expression for those listening called "you win it if you get your 50,000 words." I don't always win. One year I just did 20,000. But that was 20,000 words I wouldn't have written had I not been doing NaNoWriMo.
That's pretty amazing to get 20,000 words, I have to say, even though our goal is 50,000. And I like to pause at this point and do some math with the writer. If you write 20,000 words a month, that's 240,000 words a year. That is three to four decent-sized novels. So that's a lot of writing.
Right. And it's back to that kind of breaking it down into simple bite-sized pieces instead of thinking of it as this big insurmountable thing.
Exactly.
That's what it is for me. It's breaking it into the doable pieces.
Yeah. This math that we learned in third or fourth grade comes in really handy. Like let's do some more math. If you write 500 words a day in a month, what is that? Is that 15,000 words in a month?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's half a novel. Or a third, at least, anyway.
Yeah, that is a lot of words, and that's 180,000 words in a year. So that's just 500 words a day. That could take you, let's say, an hour, So just kind of think about how much you can write in different time that's available to you. I'll tell one more story. Toni Morrison, she was a single mom. I think she had two kids, living in New York City, working for a publishing house. After her whole day of work, and feeding the kids dinner and helping them with their homework and getting them to bed, she had about 15 minutes available to her. Not her best creative time, but she used it to write for 15 minutes a day, and that's how she wrote her first novel.
That's a little humbling, isn't it? It's both humbling and encouraging.
I was going to say inspiring. Yeah. I feel like most of us can find 15 minutes a day. And so I think in most of us, even though we're feeling very exhausted at certain times, like if that's the only time we have, and if you use it to write, look at what you can produce. You can produce something great.
Yeah. Well, my first novel, which was before my NaNoWriMo, I wrote it on the commute bus. I commuted from Marin County to San Francisco on the bus, and on the way home, I would print out my work, and then I would edit it on the bus and fix it when I got home, and then edit it on the way back tomorrow morning.
So yeah.
That's how that worked. Well, so besides NaNoWriMo, though, you, Grant, living as a creator, as a creative person, I'm wondering, what are the hardest obstacles for you?
I think I have the same obstacles that most people do. I think I have my frustrations come from just having too many ideas that I don't have enough time to work on them. And, writing a novel, writing any book takes a long time. And so you have to choose what you want to put your energies into. Otherwise I could just be writing different novels every other week. They all look really good. I'm frustrated about not having a time. I am also frustrated that as I have gotten busier and busier in my work life and my family life and my writing life, that I have less time to read.
That's a really hard one for me.
It's really tough. I yearn to find a cabin or someplace off the grid and just sit there for years and read. That's really all I want to do. And I try to find time to read, but it's certainly really tough during the weekdays, at least for me to read anything that is challenging. And like most novels I read are pretty challenging, so I usually only read on the weekends. I try to block off chunks of time for reading, though. On Saturday and Sunday mornings, I usually try to spend at least an hour each of those days, and maybe 2 hours off the internet, off everything, and just with a book. It's where I get a lot of ideas for the books I write and my writing. And it's just a great, for me, it's great on a number of levels, but just as a brainstorming and time and a way to kind of clear my mind, reading does that better than anything else. So I don't know. Those are frustrations that I have. And I don't think there's any way to really get around them unless any of your listeners want to be my patron.
I know. That's what we all need a patron, a benefactor who's going to just take care of not only just the bills, but, you know, walking the dog and all that stuff.
The dog and fixing the front gate and cleaning the house and making meals. I mean, I want the whole package.
I've been joking with friends and saying that what I need as my writer's life is that I need a 1950s housewife.
Yeah.
Like June Cleaver. So she's lovely and not moody, and she does everything and has dinner ready and doesn't ask for sex. So everything is just fine. Yeah. And all I have to do is, I just have to live in the household that she creates. So that's a weird stereotype to take advantage of, but that's my little fantasy.
Well, I'll give you a weird stereotype too. We have the same joke in my household. My wife and I don't know if you remember the show, Big Love. That used to be on. It was about a man, a Mormon who was polygamous, who's married three or four wives. And so my wife and I always joke that we need a second or third wife in the house. And so
two of you, though.
I don't care. Male, female, doesn't matter. You know, wife, husband, we just need extra people. And they need to be handy with a hammer and hopefully good cooks too.
So let's talk about why, though. Why do you bother? I mean, clearly, for most of us that write books out into the world, I'll tell prospective writers and readers alike, most writers don't make their living off their books. They just don't. It's just not, you know, with the exceptions of the J.K. Rowlings of the world, it doesn't happen that often. And so most of us have to also have day jobs or other ways to generate income, unless we do have a benefactor or something. So it's a lot of work, and it doesn't always pay that well. So why do you do it?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And certainly within that sort of framework of the practical things to do in life to survive and thrive, you know, I think if I tallied up the number of hours I've spent writing and figured out how much per hour I'm actually getting paid over a lifetime, you know, it's probably under a dollar an hour, you know, and that probably goes for most writers. It's certainly not a bonanza of money. And I've never, I mean, I knew that from the beginning. So I, you know, other than kind of having the dream of being one of those who made it, I've always been comfortable with the expectation that it wouldn't bring in much money. And so the why becomes really, really all the more important, because it is sort of an act of sabotage on your finances in some ways. It's always been a second job. I could have even waited tables or worked in a bookstore all those years, and I would have, you know, much more money to show for it. The why for me is just deeply spiritual. I don't know who I would be without it. I would go crazy in a sense. Like the days I skip writing, I notice that I'm crankier. I think the why, I mean, for me is, and when I say it's religious is in a way, is that it is like a form of prayer. It is a form of self-exploration. It is a form of exploration of life itself. It's a way to think and to think critically. It's a way to notice the nuances of life. It's a way to notice other people, other things in life. It's a way to look through another person's eyes and build tolerance and empathy. So as an act that kind of gives me something that makes me feel alive and makes me appreciate and, you know, appreciate things in the world with all five senses, you know, I just can't imagine anything else. And so that's why in the end, it doesn't really matter what I get paid for, because the act in itself gives me so much, you know? And the reason I'm cranky on the days I don't do it is because there is something fulfilling, even if I'm putting words, and working with wrestling with the most frustrating, parts of a novel, there is still something deeply satisfying about that hard work that I'm doing to find the right words, you know, to articulate these thoughts or these visions. It's hard to say, it's hard to explain the why, but you know, it's like anything, I think it's like hard to explain a religious experience. I just appreciate the way as a daily act. And that's the other thing that makes it kind of religious. It's a daily act. It's a regular part of my life, and it shapes everything about me. And, you know, it makes me a better person in the end as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes me a better listener to other people. It makes me understand their viewpoints better. Yeah, I could go on and on.
Well, I'm loving all of that, Grant, because I think that you and I are similar in that way. I'm such a believer in not the luxury of, but the necessity of storytelling, that I think of storytelling as one of the uniquely human qualities that we have. But it's our uniquely human quality, the quality of storytelling. And to me, it is also our opportunity to most deeply connect with each other, that we can build empathy between people. You know, whether it's through a funny story or through a dark one, it doesn't matter. It's about understanding each other and trying to get that. I've gotten to travel to places that I'll never go through the stories of somebody else. I doubt that I'll ever be in Afghanistan, but I've read the Kite Runner.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a way of building empathy beyond what my limited life and time lets me do. And, you know, I've been to other planets. I've been to all kinds of places, right? So I also think about, you know, Anaïs Nin said that she writes so that she can taste life twice.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's also sort of savoring the moments, how the words fit together like a puzzle, but also savoring memories and shaping them differently and making them into a different story and all of those things. For some people, I guess their spirituality happens on the golf course, you know, and that's cool, you know, because they're outdoors, they're with their friends, they're laughing, and they have their goal, and that's how they're expressing their creativity. And for others, you know, of course, all of the arts are like that. But for other people, it could be balancing a spreadsheet, I suppose, or, you know, making all the numbers line up for an organization. So it's not limited to writing for me, but it's about finding that sacred thread, finding that thing that does that for you. And for me, it's about storytelling. And that makes a lot of sense.
I think I'll go beyond that. I think storytelling, when you were saying that it's a unique human characteristic, I mean, it is. And that's the way we make meaning of the world more than any other way. I mean, of course, I'm viewing like visual arts as storytelling and dance as storytelling.
Sure.
But storytelling is the fundamental way that we understand the world. And I think, you know, that's where I think I'm not going to like put it on an equivalent status with playing golf or filling out numbers in a spreadsheet. I think those are fine activities, but they're not quite of the magnitude in terms of like, they don't make us who we are in the same way that stories do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, I certainly wasn't equating them in the same storytelling vein, but in terms of people finding how they get centered and how they keep away their own bad moods and how they feel connected to others, you know, in that way, I'll be lofty here. I do think there's something sacred about storytelling, that, you know, there's a reason that even our religious fables and all of those things come down in the form of story. And I keep wondering, I keep hoping, I keep wishing, hoping, praying, if you will, that even our broken nation and how we're speaking to each other could be solved if we were just really, really listening to each other's stories in the right way, that we weren't just reacting.
I agree. The way we both listen to other people's stories and the way we tell our own, I think, can make dramatic and miraculous change happen.
Well, you have a new book coming out. I didn't know that. And I love the title, All the Comfort Sin Can Provide. Ooh, that makes me want to read that. So for the purposes of this conversation, kind of the story of determination, how do you get from the germ of an idea? Like, where did the germ of the idea for this new book come from? And what's the story and what can we look forward to?
Yeah, it's a little less, I think, fitting in the framework of this podcast, in the sense that these are all it's a collection of the stories that I've published, you know, in the last 10 or 20 years. Mm-hmm. So each of them have their own individual story.
Oh, great.
So it's something I do, you know, separately from writing novels. I love writing short stories and reading them. And these stories are everything from, you know, my 100-word stories that I love to more conventional length of, you know, 7,000 or 8,000 word stories.
Well, so let me ask you more generally then, when you have an idea for whether it's a story or a novel, it doesn't matter to me. What's your incubation like? What, when you have a germ of a story, how do you start to let it fester and then propagate?
I wish there was some sort of 10-step process that was really reasonable and logical that I could impart, but it's just so of the moment. I mean, it's just an idea that occurs out of who knows where. And if it grabs me enough and I've got the moment of time to pursue it, or if it speaks loudly enough, then I go with it. And usually I know from the start whether I want it to be a short story or, you know, a 7,000 word story or a novel, you know. And I don't really know what goes into that decision. It's entirely just a feeling and an intuition. So, I don't have a lot to say.
Well, let me ask you this, and let me kind of shift it back. I wanted to let people know something about NaNoWriMo, and that is there are lots of, when somebody says that he or she is a writer, all of a sudden there are 10,000 things you can spend money on, from classes to workshops to retreats to editors to publishers to cover designers, all those kinds of things. But NaNoWriMo is free.
It's free.
To the user.
Yep.
And you don't have to go to a log cabin in the woods. You just have to, what I do every NaNoWriMo, I try to cook about 5 or 6 meals that I have in the freezer so that the first week is covered. And other than that, it's free. You log on, you join in, and boom, you're part of a community to the degree that you want to be.
Yeah.
Do you yourself still use NaNoWriMo partners and accountability?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been a great lesson for me. Before I did NaNoWriMo, and the reason I did NaNoWriMo was to shake up my creative writing process. And I think everybody should do that, every writer. I think they should try NaNoWriMo at least once. It might not be for them, but it's worth just trying a different creative mm-hmm. process and style. And so, yeah, I do it every year. And like you say, it's free. We want everybody to be able to tell their story. And so, we try to make it as accessible as possible. And I find that its principles help me in a lot of different ways beyond NaNoWriMo. So I think that goal and a deadline approach works with revision. It can work on a weekly level, or you can set monthly goals or yearly goals. You know, there are a lot of different ways to do mm-hmm. it and break it down. And also, like, you know, the emphasis on progress, I think, really helps with rough drafts. Before I did NaNoWriMo, sometimes I would just endlessly tweak the first chapter of a novel and not really move much beyond that early parts of a novel. And what you learn, I always repeat this Joyce Carol Oates quote, is that you don't know the first sentence of your novel until you've written the last sentence. And so a lot of times all that work you put into a first chapter, it might get cut when you revise or write the second draft. So it's really important just to get the whole story out and to really think about, you know, the whole narrative trajectory and what you're going to have happen. And then you can go back and do a lot of that noodling and tweaking and forming.
You know what I think, Grant, maybe I'd love your reaction to this as sort of our last question here. I tend to think that perfectionism is the biggest of the obstacles. Like, people want to work and work and work until they get that first part right. And then they get so discouraged because it can't possibly be because of exactly what you just said. They don't even know where the story is going or whatever. They just get obsessive about it. That perfectionism alone can be insurmountable for lots of us. So the NaNoWriMo process just kind of unclogs the drain. It kind of busts through the barrier and lets you get through that. And then you can come back and fix the first thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think NaNoWriMo is designed in many ways for people who are either perfectionist, as you say, and they're so perfectionist that they can't get to the end of a rough draft, or people who have who are afraid. Afraid of the page, afraid that they don't have anything to say, afraid of what they might say, just have fears of some sort. And so, yeah, NaNoWriMo is about all about getting rid of the obstacles, whatever those obstacles might be, could be time as well. Whatever obstacles between you and the page, NaNoWriMo is there to kind of explode, make that obstacle, blow it apart, whatever the, the verb is.
Yeah. Right, bust through.
Bust through. Well,
it seems like you and I suffer from the same malady too, in that I've never understood writer's block. I hear about that a lot. I've always had the opposite. I've had writer's logjam. I just have too many ideas to focus. So we're all different a little bit that way. But I tend to think more creative people are of that latter variety, where it's not so much that they can't come up with an idea, it's that they have so many that they can't kind of quiet all the rest of the voices so they can focus on the one.
Yeah, I think so. I think writer's block is often invented by people. Mm-hmm. I think writer's block can happen if people are going through depression or trauma of some sort.
Sure.
But that's a little different. I think just your everyday writer's block, it happens because you say that it's happening, or sometimes people kind of even fetishize it for strange reasons. And the reason I say this is that I've led hundreds of what we call word sprints in NaNoWriMo. And the gist of these is that I say a writing prompt, I give people 5 or 10 minutes to write as many words as they can to the prompt. And I've never seen anyone not write. Everyone has written. And so all you need to write is the door in your mind to crack open a little bit. I mean, your mind is a whole cauldron of stories and words. And if you open that crack in the door, a story will come out. And so that's my proof that writer's block doesn't exist.
Well, that's a beautiful place for us to end. Grant, thank you so much for your time and for all of the encouragement. I try to imagine how many stories have been told because of NaNoWriMo alone, much less your podcasts and encouragements and your pep talks and all of those things. I myself I just got your book Pep Talks a few weeks ago, as you know, and I went on a little mini writer's retreat with a dear writer pal the other day, and 3 times during the day we'd stop our writing and I'd read one of your pep talks to us. So it was a lovely experience. I want to thank you for that and encourage other creatives and other writers to find Pep Talks for Writers by Grant Faulkner, and to listen in to Right Minded, a weekly podcast for writers, which you co-host with Brooke Warner, who was also a guest on this program. So Grant, thank you so much for your time today. I can't tell you how I love talking with you, and I'll look forward to other opportunities.
Yeah, me too, Betsy. Thank you for the kind words, the kind questions. Thanks for that kind mention of Pep Talks. I'm really honored.
I had such fun talking with Grant Faulkner today. And the things I'd like to take away from the conversation, the extra blooms there, are, sure, mostly for those who are writers, that whole notion of storytelling and how vital and important it is to us. And I believe it's important to everybody, whether we are fully aware of it or not. But also just that idea of making your creative time a priority, carving the time out, not waiting until things settle down and everything gets easy, because it never does. If you're an active, engaged person with friends and loves and perhaps family and interests and distractions and obligations and all those things, there's just never going to be a Grand Canyon of a time that opens up for you to do the things that have meaning for you. I haven't found that to be the case. The only time that I've found that happens is when I create it for myself. So I invite you to look at carving a little time out of your calendar that's just for the things that have meaning for you. If that happens to be writing, NaNoWriMo is a great thing. That's NaNoWriMo, NaNoWriMo. And you can check it out for free. It's a cool resource and a really great community that's full of playful, delightful, encouraging people. And you can be as involved or uninvolved as you'd like. It's been my delight to talk to Grant today, and my honor that you would listen to this conversation. If you've enjoyed this conversation on the Morning Glory Project, I hope that you'll give us a positive rating and maybe share the idea out with a friend that there are lots of different kinds of amazing people on this podcast telling their stories of determination. Until then, go out and bloom.